Most of us are lucky enough never to have to think much about organ donation, but some people can't go an hour without thinking about it. By the end of every day, about 22 people in the United States have died waiting for a donated organ. And about 150 people are added to the organ transplant waiting list every day. Also, every day, nearly 100 people receive an organ transplant and get a shot at a new life. And here's another remarkable statistic. One person can save 8 other lives by being organ and tissue donors. We take a look at the need, the gifts, the miracle of donating life to another human, and meet one of the recipients of that gift who is thriving after a heart transplant. Fox 11 News In Depth starts right now. Hello, everyone. I'm Hal Eisner, and this is Fox 11 News In Depth. What a remarkable thing it is to be able to give someone a new life. That's basically what an organ transplant will do. And that's not even getting into the healing brought about by donors of tissue or corneas. Our next guest is intimately familiar with all of this. He's about 2 years out from a heart transplant surgery and by his own account is vibrant and energetic and thriving in his new life. But that's not all. As an astonishing twist, his mother is also a heart transplant recipient of a number of years ago. Steve Kammerer joining us right now, Steve Kammerer Jr. And, you know, it's pretty remarkable. You and mom.
Yep. My mom, about 13 years prior to me, she's doing well. She's happy and healthy and enjoying her grandkids and her kids.
You know, we talk about this as being a gift, and it is a gift. But the gift of life, because you're giving somebody a chance at extending theirs.
Yes. It's an incredible gift that I don't intend on taking lightly. It's the most incredible gift somebody can give is the gift of life.
How was that situation for you? You had some heart issue, and I assume since you're on TV here with me, you don't mind talking about this,
no.
But you had some heart issue. You required a new heart, or?
Yes, yeah. So it got down to where it was a lot of years leading up to it of heart issues, and so it wasn't a sudden thing. We kind of had anticipated it for years, and eventually I was, you know, at work on a Friday and then went in for some tests on a Monday, and to Cedars-Sinai, and after the test, they decided to keep me, and they moved me up on the transplant waiting list once I was
because it was that critical.
Because it was that critical, I was connected to monitors that essentially went into my heart and stayed in my heart through the entire time. Monitoring the function of my heart and the pressures in there, and I was on an IV medication for about 60 days. I was in the hospital for a total of
What was the recovery like for that?
It's funny. I spent you know, almost 70 days waiting, and after the transplant, I was standing up. You had some video of it in the beginning, and walking the next day. They really try to get you out of there
you know, I just saw some words there. I was crying. And tell me about that reference.
Probably the hardest part of the transplant process. It was the mental toll it took on me waiting in the hospital that long. There's a lot of people that wait a lot longer than I did, so I don't take that for granted. But I was in there for 70 days waiting, just waiting for an organ to come available for me.
That must have been a rabbit hole.
It was. Mentally, it was, you know, a lot of downs, some ups, you know. But it really takes a toll on you after a long time.
But then you get the word that there is a donation.
Yes.
And then what happens to you?
People ask me if I was nervous at all for the surgery or anything like that, but no, by that time I was ready to get on with it. You know, good outcome or bad.
But then you get the heart and there's a potential for rejection.
Yes. So afterwards, you are you're monitored very closely. You do biopsies weekly and then monthly. It, you know, they stretch it out, and they're taking tissue samples of the organ. And
were there any rejection issues?
I was very lucky. I did not have any rejection
issues. Does that happen often?
It does, and they basically adjust medications and hopefully they're able to get that under control.
I'm fascinated by the notion that it's you and your mom. So let me just start off with the question of, did you have heart issues in your family, and did it just sort of pass from one to the other? And then this idea that mom and you both, I guess, ended up with exactly the same problem with the heart, and then you end up with exactly the same remedy.
Yes. So my mom and I have share a lot of things in common. We've been electrically shocked to get our hearts back into a normal rhythm in the same room at the same time. Previously, we shared, most of our doctors have all been the same doctors. My mom had a defibrillator put in her. She had one of the very early implantable defibrillators that were, it was the size of like a VHS tape.
Right.
Almost. It was pretty large.
I've covered these things for a long time. I remember some of the baby heart transplants over at Loma Linda University Hospital. Mm-hmm. And what's it like, what's that feeling to have somebody else's heart inside your body?
It's a surreal feeling. It's almost can kind of drive you nuts if you think about it too much. I do have instances where I'm in the middle of something and I think about it and it kind of freaks me out a little bit.
Have you met anybody from the families of those people that gave you that heart?
I have not. I've reached out. I sent a letter, but it falls on them whether they want to make contact with me.
Tell me about the recovery a little bit. You know, how long is that? How fragile is that?
So the beginning is very fragile. You are constantly being poked and prodded and tested to make sure that you're not experiencing any rejection or anything like that. There's a lot of swelling involved, and it's difficult to get around, and you're just very uncomfortable. But miraculously, what the doctors tell you is give it till about 3 months, and you'll start to feel
better.
A little.
And how healthy are you now?
I'm very healthy.
Ready to run around the studio a few times?
I could. I've started racing mountain bikes since my transplant.
Really?
Yes. I have gotten really into mountain biking, and I use, you know, I
something you couldn't have done before the heart transplant.
Correct.
Wow.
Correct.
Steve Kammerer Jr., so glad you're here.
Thank you very much
really.
For having me.
I mean, without that heart.
Yes. Yes.
Right?
Yeah. And right. Thank you so much for having me on and doing this story, because it's very important that people donate. There's a lot of rumors out there, you know, that are not true.
We're going to talk more about that as the show progresses.
Yeah.
But, you know, thank you again and all the best. A doctor weighs in on organ transplantation and what innovations are being implemented to make the process better in the future. We'll have that coming up. Welcome back to Fox 11 News In Depth. For most of us, the idea of a heart transplant or any transplant just boggles the mind. But at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center, they just set a new record for transplants over the past year, and they performed a rare triple transplant. So joining us to talk about that is Dr. Irene Kim, the director of the Cedars-Sinai Comprehensive Transplant Program. Good to see you, Dr. Kim, and thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Cedars-Sinai is making great strides in transplant medicine. And well, you just heard, we talked with Steve Kammerer, who had a heart transplant. Is that something we dare to say is becoming commonplace?
Yes, a solid organ transplant is usually the treatment of choice for end organ failure, and it gives patients their lives back. I love the videos of Steve doing his mountain biking. That's exactly the purpose of having a heart transplant or liver transplant or whatever solid organ transplant is, to give a patient his or her life back.
You know, Steve leads an active life, as you just pointed out, with the mountain biking. But I suspect a lot of people have misconceptions about transplant recipients. They can actually live quite normally, right?
Very normally. I always tell patients, once you get out of the immediate postoperative period, we want you to enjoy your life. We want you to travel. You can take your medications and do all the things that you had intended to do before the transplant. So it's exactly that, to give people their lives back.
There is still the issue of the need for immunosuppressive medication, but there may be a change on the horizon, right? There's some new therapies out there.
Yeah, we talk about the Holy Grail in transplant, and that's to be off of all immunosuppression, these medications that you need to suppress your immune system so that one doesn't reject his or her organ. But we're still quite far away from that goal. In a select few patients, we are able to achieve some medication minimization, but in general, it's still quite needed.
So one of the major obstacles remains a shortage of donor organs. And so how do we deal with that?
So I just want to acknowledge the incredible gift of life that organ donors provide. It's always during an incredibly hard time for a donor and a donor's family. And during that really difficult period, that's when they come forward as an organ donor. And I just want to acknowledge that incredible gift. Donors are not paid for it. It's completely voluntary in this country. And as you pointed out, one organ donor can save 8 lives through solid organ transplant. I hope that more and more people who are interested in organ donation make their wishes known, either through their driver's license or with their families. If we really knew how many people would be willing to donate organs at the time of death, I think we would have many more organs for transplant.
Can you give me a ballpark here? I mean, what is the ratio of people who need organs to people who give organs?
So there are over 100,000 people waiting for a solid organ transplant in the United States alone. And this is for organs that are above the diaphragm and below the diaphragm: kidney transplant, liver transplant, heart transplant, lung transplant. And all those patients are placed on the waiting list. I've seen some statistics. I've heard about 17 patients die every day waiting for a solid organ transplant on the waiting list. So there is quite a demand supply issue.
Just to take you out of your doctor's hat for a second, that's got to be awful. That's got to be awful when you lose people while they're waiting for this gift of life.
It is awful. And again, I just want to shout out to all the organ donors and their families again, because it's the incredible gift of life that enables this to happen. And we need more people to think about organ donation, because it is quite terrible when you have a patient who's waiting and dies before they can get a transplant.
Let's talk about some of the advances. I go way back on this. I mean, it's not an old science. It's a new science, really, because I can remember not that many years ago that we were dealing with little baby hearts out at Loma Linda Medical Center, and it just has grown and grown and grown. So what is the progress? What are some of the advances we've seen?
Some of the major advances that we are using right now: machine perfusion, where we pump the organs and allow for longer times. As soon as we remove an organ from a donor, we have to implant it really quickly. And sometimes that time constraint can make it really challenging. So this new field of machine perfusion, it's actually not that new, has enabled us to take out these longer ischemic times on the organ. Another big advancement is the use of robotic surgery, smaller incisions for the sake of transplant. At Cedars, we performed our first robotic lung transplant ever in the world, where we can do a lung transplant through these small incisions instead of the classic huge clamshell incision that we've had to do in the past.
We only have a minute left, but I want to ask you a question. I want to give you a chance to give a pitch, but the rejection issues, it used to be that was more the rule, not the exception. Is it now the exception more than the rule?
Unfortunately, rejection is still quite common. And so that's part of what our job as transplant providers is to make sure that patients are not rejecting their organs. Again, immunosuppression is still needed. There are very, very, very few patients who can get through their transplant without any medication, only like identical twins, for example. But the technology, the medicine, the research is getting better. And I hope that someday in my lifetime, we'll have a transplant that doesn't need medication. Mm.
Make a pitch real quick. Talk to the audience out here. Tell them what you want to say.
I just want to say that, you know, we really do need patients to think about, people to think about organ donation. And it's a simple conversation. Again, there are many myths related to organ donation, but you have the potential to save lives when you die, when you pass away, for organs that you no longer need. So again, I thank the families out there who've already done this. And I myself am a registered organ donor. And it's something that I hope you think about too.
Dr. Irene Kim, hats off for the work that
thank
you do.
Thank you so much.
All right, all the best. Coming up next on Fox 11 News in Depth, One Legacy is a nonprofit organization that has a challenging but inspiring mission of sourcing organs for transplantation. We'll have their story after this break. Don't go away. Welcome back to Fox 11 News in Depth. As we've seen, the human impact of organ donation is immeasurable. More than 100,000 people in the U.S. are waiting for an organ transplant, and more than 20,000 of those are right here in California. In the case of some organs, the wait can be multiple years. One Legacy is a local nonprofit organization that facilitates organ donation for life-saving and for healing as well, and it serves an important part of the equation by supporting the survivors of these donors who are the entire process, really. And so it's interesting because we've heard from a recipient of a heart. We've heard from a doctor that provides the hearts. Now we're going to talk to you about the procurement of hearts. E. Tiffany Jones is with One Legacy, and that's got to be a tough job. I mean, you're dealing with grieving parents, grieving folks, grieving is a big part of what you have to deal with.
Absolutely. You know, grieving loved ones in general. Typically, when someone passes away, it's in a manner where it's unexpected. And so what happens is that loved one is hoping that they can save their life, but unfortunately, that might not be the case. And so there's a family approach team that has to go and talk to that loved one, share the opportunity to become an organ donor. And it's medically complex.
But how personal does it become?
Emotionally complex.
Yeah, that's what we're known.
And it's, you know, very, very tough because 24/7, 365, there is someone approaching families for the opportunity to give that gift. And it's hard, you know, because typically you have sustained a neurological injury. And so it's immediate. It's right at the spot. And it's not expected. And you're hoping that your loved one recovers.
But talk about a roller coaster.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, on one side, you've got the grieving, and on the other side, you've got the anticipation, the anxiousness of getting a heart.
Yeah, so this work is emotionally charged, and you have to be prepared for that, right? Because you never know what situation or circumstances you may approach when you're talking with the loved one. But also, as you mentioned, that potential recipient that is waiting and what they're going through as they're on their journey, hoping that they could get that life-saving gift.
Yeah, give us a little bit of the scope of One Legacy and what you do there. I know you procure, but what is the scope of the organization?
Yeah, so One Legacy, we are the largest organ procurement organization in the country.
And you're dealing with everything, right? Hearts, livers, kidneys, whatever,
yes, right? Every diseased organ. And so we do the procurement now in our center. So we have a recovery center, which helps freeze a bed from our hospitals and allow the loved ones to get some more time with their family member. But what we do is an array. We educate our community about, you know, making that decision. We want you to register. We do the procurement. We work with the hospitals and the transplant centers. We also do authorization. So after you get that potential match, we do work to try to match it with the system, and we have our teams supporting all of that.
And you come to this from a very personal perspective. You're all too familiar with this need, right?
Oh, yeah. Very personal. As my father, this is how I got into the work, received in heart 6 years ago, and he got it on Mother's Day, which was my first Mother's Day. And, you know, it was really a hard time for our family at that moment, and I wanted to see what could I do to really get more involved, to educate, because we were learning as he was going through this journey. We didn't know much. We didn't know what to expect, and I wanted to make sure that others were more informed as they were going through the same journey.
What was that like?
It was tough. So I was back and forth on a flight, back and forth to the East Coast. We were sitting in a hospital room for hours. He was not able to be released. He was there for 6 months. He was waiting, and it was scary. Another part that you don't know is my grandfather also needed a heart, and he did.
Does this run in the family? I mean, Steve?
Actually, the cases were different, but... you know, my grandfather was in need, and he did get a heart. Unfortunately, he didn't make it through full recovery. And so it was a very scary moment for my family to see, you know, what my father was going to, you know, endure. And we didn't really know the outcomes.
But what you also do is you provide a support system. So it's not just get heart, put in heart, get liver, put in. It's really then you have sort of the support system that takes you forward, right?
Absolutely. And that's what we do at One Legacy. We provide support to the donor families. We comfort them. We're giving them an opportunity to connect with other donor families so they don't feel alone in this process. And it was very, very critical even in my time of need when my father was waiting. And so it's very important that you do have that support system.
You know, we saw your One Legacy's Rose Parade float. And we were out there preparing our Rose Parade special, which will be coming up here on Christmas and Christmas Eve on Fox 11. And talk about that float for a moment, because it was kind of interesting.
Yeah, so Woven Together is our theme this year, and it's actually a Hopi tradition, and they have butterfly dancers. And the butterfly is synonymous with organ donation, as, you know, you have the caterpillar, and then you have life after that. And so it was very important, as this year is the theme of music, and we wanted to make sure that it's a bit of celebration. You know, it's a roller coaster ride, as you said, and it's often dark, but there's also light on the other end of that. And that's what we like to do with this Rose Parade and our floats each year.
Well, the bottom line is that you can get your message out through a parade like that with a float, or you can get your message out by giving us a very brief message right now to the people that are out there.
It's important that you register. It's important that you share what your wishes are with your family. Over, you know, 100,000 people are waiting, and not everyone can be a donor. Only you die in 1% of the manner where you can save that life.
All right.
So register to be a donor.
Thanks so much. And Fox 11 News in Depth continues right after this break. Don't go away. That's it for this week's Fox 11 News In Depth. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a great week, everybody, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.